This episode, Marvel Star Wars, issue number 48, cover dated June 1981. Hello, and welcome to Marvel Star Wars, From Empire to Jedi. We are a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. My name's the Irredeemable Shag, and I'm your host, but I am not flying solo. Every single episode, we feature a different guest host. For this episode, my co-host is a talented podcaster, teacher, artist, guitarist, and video editor. Honestly, we're fortunate that the Force guided him to our recording today. He was all set to go to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters, but instead, like the heroic Jedi, he rerouted his mission to join us in our darkest hour. Folks, please help me welcome Mr. Henry Bernstein. Welcome to the Rebel Base, Henry. Thanks for being here, man. How you doing?
But I was supposed to go to Tashi Station and pick up some power converters. My favorite line ever.
Is that you, Mark? Yeah. Is Mr. Hamill here with us now? That was uncanny.
Thank you. There's that 19-year-old wine. I mean, that's the stuff of legend.
Exactly.
Great. Thank you, Shaq, for having me.
I am so excited you're here. You and I got a chance to talk Back to the Future comics last year. And we had such a great time. And then you said you would love to be on any other show. And I said, hey, I've got a comic. And you said, and I told you about this one. And you're like, oh, yeah, I love comics of questionable caliber. And I said, oh, you're going to like this one.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, we just need to be upfront here, folks. This issue, we're going to have a lot of fun with it, I promise. But it is ridiculous. It is, you know what, Henry? Is this the worst Star Wars comic you've ever read by chance?
I mean, it might be the worst comic I've ever read. It's definitely the worst Star Wars comic for sure. I mean, not even on the podium, gold medal, worst of all time. But, you know, it's sort of like the Razzies, you know, it's kind of a badge of honor, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they should be proud that they wrote a comic this doofy. And now I realize already in the comments, somebody is already banging away at the keyboard, like, this is my favorite issue ever. You have ruined my childhood. Well, I am terribly sorry. We did not ruin your childhood. Larry Hama just ruined your childhood. I'm just saying, folks.
Another childhood ruined by the Irredeemable Shag.
There's been a few. So I like to start the show just talking about what's going on in my life in Star Wars. And if you have anything, feel free to chime in yours. But for me, one of the things I do is I exercise so I don't just die. And one of the things, I jog on a treadmill, which is incredibly boring. But what I do to help keeping me distracted is I watch typically Star Wars stuff. So I recently finished Rebels, which was a lot of fun. I absolutely loved that cartoon. That was great. Then I moved on to The Bad Batch. I had no expectations going into that and thoroughly loved The Bad Batch. Mm. That really threw me for a loop. And now I'm going to try again Clone Wars. I have tried it before. It didn't do much for me. No idea if I'm going to stick with it. But so far, I'm halfway through the first movie that launched it, which I hated in the theater. But actually, it's not. Maybe I don't know whether it's just been the years or watching all these other cartoons. It's not that bad, actually. So I'm optimistic.
Mm. I would say I've been a little down on Star Wars the last few years, like sort of just what the output is of like new Star Wars. But in the last few years, I've gotten to introduce my kids to it. So now both of my children have seen the original Star Wars, and my older son, Judah, who's 8, has seen Empire and Jedi, of course.
Woohoo!
I haven't even told them the names of the episodes, lest they start calling them by episode name. Like, in this house, we call them Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi.
Very good.
My son really wants to go see the Mandalorian movie. I'm sort of meh on it. But I think we're going to start watching The Mandalorian, as the next thing.
Cool.
So I'm not, jumping, you know, to, show him the prequels or the sequels. And, you know, it's so funny you said that you've tried Clone Wars. Shag, I've tried it so many times, and, I just can't get into it. I don't know if it's the animation or... It's just like it's so much lore, and like maybe it's the years of people lecturing me about how great it is that I'm just like, so
that's part of the resistance for me is
yeah.
The more someone tells me it's great, the more I push back against it. And I think that's part of it.
Like, let me decide it's great, but yeah. I guess I have to watch it in order to decide it. So maybe you've inspired me. Maybe I'll try again. And maybe again, my kids, maybe it'll be a good, like after my daughter finishes Jedi, maybe it'll be a good thing for, I don't know.
That you might have to watch Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, though, for it to even make sense.
Exactly. I know. And do I really want to watch Attack of the Clones or Phantom Menace? Not really.
Now, I got to ask you, were you a responsible parent and do it in the proper order and show Star Wars, then the holiday special, then Empire in Return? Because that's the way to do it.
That's like varsity parenting for Star Wars watching. I have not shown them the holiday special. But I think I would show them the holiday special before I show them the prequels or the sequels.
Well, they got to understand why they celebrate Life Day. I mean,
yeah,
come
of
on.
Course.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've got one more exciting thing to share for me is that I'm now part of a Star Wars role-playing group. We're playing the old West End Games role-playing group, and we're only a couple sessions in, but we're having a blast. So I'm so excited to be doing that again. I love the West End Games role-playing game. It's so much fun. So, hey, you know, when your kids get a little older, that would be an awesome family thing to do, play with the kids.
Maybe. Now, that's like the game that's closer to like Dungeons and Dragons rather than like the deck building stuff.
Yes, right? Very much. Yeah, it's called a tabletop role-playing game. Yeah, you got a book. The Theater of the Mind. Exactly right, yes. But amazing. You don't end up sacrificing people and dying in the sewers. That doesn't happen in Star Wars. So. Now, folks, as we get into this, you know, we're going to have some fun with it. We're going to poke at it a bit. Don't take any offense. We're doing it from a place of love, but also we are not experts. We're just, you know, passionate fans. So if we get something wrong, which is pretty darn likely, honestly, don't come at us too hard, please. You know, be gentle. Feel free to correct us, but, you know, don't wear your pocket protector and push your glasses up while you do it. Is that fair?
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Now, before we get too much further, we do need to take a second to thank our sponsors. Folks, this episode of Empire to Jedi is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Now, every episode, we select a collected edition to briefly discuss from the InStockTrades library, and usually it's tied into Star Wars in some way, shape, or form. I picked Star Wars Legends trade paperback Forever Crimson. Now, I'm going to do something I never do. I never read the description, but I'm going to for this one because I love it so much. It says, a Star Wars saga, decades in the making. Meet the droid-hating Valence the Hunter, who's hot on Luke Skywalker's trail. Will his destiny end by finding the rebel hero or in a deadly confrontation with Darth Vader? Then Luke and his X-Wing squadron find a derelict Imperial Star Destroyer with everyone on board dead and their skin turned crimson. Will the virus responsible leave Luke in a coma? Han Solo and his allies face a race against time to cure the mysterious malady. Then, in celebration of Marvel's 80th anniversary, the landmark Star Wars issue number 108 returns to the Legends era of a long time ago for one issue only, continuing the stories of Valence and the Crimson Forever. All right, I had to read that because Star Wars number 50 is my absolute favorite Star Wars comic of all time. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite comics of all time as well. And this collects Star Wars 50, which is all that Crimson Forever stuff. It's got the Valence stories in there. Then it's got the issue 108, which was the coda that came out 20, 30 years after the series was over. So you've got Archie Goodwin writing these things. You've got Walt Simonson drawing these things. It's 152 pages. Normally goes for $19.99, but you get it 35% off. So it's only $12.19. That's $13. That's less than eating out for like one meal is nowadays. So Star Wars Legends trade paperback Forever Crimson, you will not be disappointed. Now, Henry, did you happen to bring anything to discuss?
Yeah, I'm sorry it's not Star Wars related, but I love InStockTrades independent of you. And even and last time I was talking with you, I was singing its praises. But what a great way to get omnibuses and hardcovers and trade. I mean, that's the only place that I've gotten the omnibuses from, like Superman Triangle Era omnibuses. But I just picked up Absolute Death of Superman number 75. It was 40% off. It was like $75. Like, that's like a thing that's like hundreds of dollars in the comic shop. So
that's awesome.
I love InStockTrades.
Yeah, normally it goes for 125. You can get it for $75. Dude, and 424 pages. And it's Death of Superman. You know that's good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. it's amazing. And everyone, I mean, the reviews for that Absolute were amazing. I mean, it's not the Gravestone one that mm-hmm. was only in comic shops, but that's okay. I don't know where I would put that thing anyway.
Right. Well, that's awesome. That's a fantastic pick. So, folks, for these and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit InStockTrades.com. Now, this episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support. Because, you know, running the Firewater Podcast Network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services. And a while back, we realized we need some help with the expenses. So we launched a Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. So if you're enjoying shows like Marvel Star Wars From Empire to Jedi, the best way to support our show is by visiting Patreon.com/FW Podcasts. And while you're there, please consider supporting the network, and a certain tiers will get mentioned on your favorite shows. This episode, special thanks go out to Corellian Pirate, Alderanian Al the Comics Guy, Dantari David Ace Gutierrez, Gorman Gord Tolton, and Mustafarian Mike Acheson. Again, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW Podcasts. Now, folks, get out on the social media. We want to hear from you. You can find us on most of the social medias as Empire to Jedi. But most importantly, leave your comments on our website, because that's where I'll pull your feedback to read on the air. So that's fireandwaterpodcast.com/Empire to Jedi. And stay tuned after Henry and I get done discussing this wonderful comic, and you can hear people's feedback from the last episode. Because I always say it's about building a community of online Star Wars fans around the show. Now, Henry, I got some questions for you here, buddy. I need to know your personal origin story with Star Wars comics. Tell me about it, buddy.
Okay, so Star Wars is very important to me. And I think last time we spoke, I talked about how my brothers, who were born in the 70s, anything that they wanted to influence me with, they did. So Superman the movie, Star Wars, Back to the Future, Indiana Jones, all that stuff I love.
Woohoo!
Was because I saw, you know, Star Wars for the first time when I was on a black and white TV when I was 3 years old, you know, like, and it blew me away. And so Star Wars is, as a thing, important to me. I'm probably, if I had to pick one, I'm probably more of a Trekkie than a Star Wars person. But yeah, Star Wars has always been like, you know, yes, very important to me. The comics, I would say I dabbled in the comics over the years, the various, you know, Marvel here or there, whatever the time they, every time Star Wars got popular again and they'd reboot a series, I'd pick up an issue here or there. Those original issues, the run you're covering, I think I had, you know, I would, if I found one in a 25-cent bin, I would definitely pull it. I was always thrown off by the art of those because it didn't look like what I pictured to be Star Wars.
Sure.
And when I was younger, I wasn't like aware enough of like Carmine Infantino to like appreciate that. But I would say in recent years, I really got into, I think one of the good things coming out of the Disneyfication of Star Wars was the comics. Like, I thought the different series they did, kind of covering what you're doing, like Empire to Jedi, mm-hmm. that was a really good series. The Vader solo, all the Vader solo series, I have found amazing. Like I think Vader Down is a series where it's after Star Wars, and so his TIE fighter gets marooned somewhere, and he has to like kind of build himself back up, and it's really awesome. And he's completely diabolical in these comics, so it's like how it is in the movies, where you're rooting for Darth Vader, but you're also like, oh my god, this is the best heel ever. He's such a villain. I both hate him and love him. So yeah, I would say like the modern Star Wars comics are sort of probably the most comics I've read in the Star Wars world.
So two things. One, I actually just started reading those myself within the last few months. Doing this podcast got me excited again for reading some of those that I'd never read, those Marvel ones you're talking about. And so I read those. I'll talk about that in a second. The second thing that's going to blow your mind, those are 10 years old.
Oh my God, stop.
So when you call them modern, they're like almost a generation ago at this point,
oh
believe it or not.
God.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that insane? But yeah, that Vader series, the one you just referenced that leads into Vader Down, and then even the one that comes after, are some of the best Star Wars comics I've read. They were excellent. Now, you got to read a whole trade paperback rather than a single issue really to get into it, but
right. So
stinking good. And Vader Down was this like perfect culmination of everything they'd been building in the Vader book and the main Star Wars book. And it, you know, Dr. Aphra was there
with the
killer droids,
yes.
And it was so good. So I'm so glad you read those. They really excited me for the Star Wars comics that Marvel produced 10 years ago.
Oh my God.
I only just read them too, so I'm right there with you, buddy. So then the next question is, who is your favorite Star Wars expanded universe character? Now, that doesn't have to be from comics. It can be from outside of the movies. It could be, you know, from the comics or novels or role-playing games or video games. It could be from the holiday special. It could be, you know, the Star Tours ride, you know, whatever. So what do you got?
Oh my God, the Star Tours ride. I love that. I love that ride as a kid and as a young adult. And then when I took my kids like a few years ago and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to throw up. Like I needed to like put my head between, I had to close my eyes. But I was like, oh, I didn't realize how, like I just, you know, when you get older, it's, you know, you can't experience those things the same way. But I would say, you know, I like some of the video games. I've really liked the Fallen Jedi or whatever it's called, the recent one on PlayStation with the kid from Shameless. I forget the name of that. And then
I can't help you. I'm not a video game guy.
A video game guy. Okay, but I would say like that. My favorite expanded universe character is Starkiller from the Force Unleashed game, and this was a cool game where the character is played by the guy who was on Smallville, who played Doomsday. Do you remember? I don't know if you watched Smallville. Anyway,
I watched a lot of it. I don't know if I got that far.
It was later. Yeah, it was later. He was like sort of a Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing. He like would turn into Doomsday. It was an interesting take. But anyway, this Jedi, he's like, you get, it's kind of a choose your own adventure where at the end you get to decide whether you want to be light side or dark side, and you either fight Vader or like fight Luke. And he's just a great character. He has really cool powers, like he has the Emperor's lightning powers, and it's just a fun, you know, first person game.
Was this the one where like Vader took a secret apprentice or something like that?
Yes.
I remember seeing a lot of that. I watched a lot of the trailers for that. The game looked amazing. Yeah.
I mean, if you watch just the cutscenes, it's a pretty good movie. Both of them, the first one and the second one. And I wish they would remaster it and re-release it. And so you're his apprentice the whole time. And then at the end, you get to decide whether you fully give in to the Force or fight against him. Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. And Vader's in it a lot, which makes the game amazing. So, yeah, that's my favorite.
Galen Merrick?
Yeah, Starkiller is what he's mostly known for. If you Google Starkiller Force Unleashed, it's all on YouTube. It's all good stuff. You know.
Very cool. Good reusage of Starkiller from Anakin Starkiller. Good.
Right. I think that was the idea there.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
homage. Yes.
Well, fantastic. I love asking that question because I always go into this anticipating every single person's going to say Mara Jade, and I don't think anyone has yet except for me. So I love this. I love it. So this is great. All right. Well, let's get into this comic because we're so anxious to. It is Star Wars number 48, published by Marvel Comics, cover dated June 1981, on the shelves March 24th, 1981. Cover price is 50 cents, 2 shiny quarters. Covers by Carmen Infantino and Bob Wycheck. So, Henry, why don't you describe the cover for us?
Okay. This cover, I mean, all right. So it's like a cool action shot of Vader and Leia. You've got a purple background. You've got the Star Wars logo. Vader is holding his hand out, deflecting a very close range blaster shot from Leia while holding in his other hand a fire sword. I mean, that's his lightsaber. And she is like standing with her body twisted in a way that would make Rob Liefeld cringe. Like, I don't understand the physics of why her body is that way. But anyway, she's like twisted and her leg is extended, standing over what looks like a fallen person with a mustache. And R2 is there next to her, you know, being loyal. But the cover just doesn't make sense to me. I don't know.
So this is unfortunately one of my least favorite Star Wars covers from this era. I hate to say that.
Awful.
We're not here to bury this thing. I promise, folks. We're not, because I told you guys in my first episode, I'm all about finding your joy. We're not just here to be mean. We're going to be critical, but we're going to find some fun in this, okay? So, like, we should be excited. It's Leia versus Vader, which is pretty cool, right? It just doesn't work a lot for me. Part of it is it's a very Infantino Vader, right? Which means that the mask is way off model.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's like that, you know, when you, the original first issue of Star Wars, and you're just like, who are these characters? You know, that's like, that's not Star Wars. I mean, and, you know, I should say, Carmine Infantino, like, it blows me away that this was his main Marvel thing, because he's a DC guy to me. Like, when I think of Carmine Infantino, I think of Batman and Robin on the roof, you know, hunched over. I think of The Flash, you know, like, so it's so funny to see him here, and I don't want to trash him. He's a legend, but
right.
I don't know. This doesn't work for me.
Well, the interesting thing, I'm glad you mentioned that. So, you know, he's a DC for years. He goes over to Marvel. This comic is his last one on the book. So this is his last Star Wars comic, because he goes back to DC after this.
Right.
DC makes him an offer, so he leaves Marvel to go back to DC. So this is the last one. We're going to see his artwork again, because there's a few issues from now where they repurpose some old artwork. It's a little hard to explain. We'll get there when we get there. But this is his last one as the official penciler. So anyway, you mentioned it earlier. The perspective's all wonky, right? Because, like, first off, you know, the Leia's pose, well, I'm a man, so I will say it is kind of sexy. But still, like, her left leg is, like, twice the length of the rest of her entire body.
Yes!
Something's not right there. Then she's shooting him with her laser gun or blaster, and he's using his hand and deflecting it, just like he did in Empire Strikes Back, right? He's deflecting the blast. And there's only maybe a foot and a half between the tip of her blaster and his hand. So they're really close together.
There should be a hole in his hand. I don't care what horsepowers he has. In his robot hand, it should be sizzling with, like, circuitry and fire.
That's fair. That is fair. But from the perspective issue, so again, the gun is that close to the hand, and yet the lightsaber, which is in his other hand, in theory, if he's that close, that thing should be, like, through her head, and yet it's miles away from her still. So how does that perspective exactly work? I don't get that.
Maybe the title, the third law, is like the name of what law they're using for perspective here, because it just does not make sense.
And in the fuchsia background, or it depends, I'm reading on Marvel Unlimited, it's very fuchsia. I'm reading in the physical comic, it's purple. I've got both right here in front of me. It's fine, but it's also kind of boring at the same time. It doesn't really add anything to the excitement. Then you get a couple of really weird Infantino architecture pieces in the background, which you look at and you're like, oh, that's Infantino. There's no denying that. So I think my favorite thing on the cover is the continued use in the corner box of
3PO. That's my favorite thing.
3PO and R2. It's Al Williamson and Carlos Garzon. They drew months ago, and it looks great.
It's amazing. And, you know, I'm a sucker for that corner box art. You know, I love, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s, a good Superman one. I love when Spider-Man and the Marvel comics is up there. And in the Star Wars, it's just like, you like look at this kind of mess of a cover, and then if your eyes gaze upward, it's just like you're coming home. It's like, oh, they're my buddies. Like, you know, just sort of holding court there.
Exactly. So, all right, well, let's get inside. And
we have to?
Oh, okay, look, again, folks, we're going to have some fun.
Sorry.
We're going to poke some fun at this. We really are. But just so you know, this is a one-off. Next issue begins an amazing run. 49 is a fantastic issue. 50 is my favorite of all time. So we're going to have some fun here. And after this is over, we're going to do some amazing comics. So here we go. Let's get into this. So it's written by Larry Hama, art by Carmen Infantino and Carlos Garzon. And they're very specific about that. They don't say penciler and inker. So I think what we're dealing with here is, and we saw this an issue or two ago, I think Carmine did loose pencils and Carlos is finishing probably. Letter is Rick Parker, colorist is Glennis Wien, editor is Louise Jones, who will later go on to become Louise Simonson, Wheezy, our beloved.
No way, that's Wheezy?
Yeah, that's Wheezy.
Oh man, oh, that makes me so happy. Another one of my old friends.
when I got her husband to sign one of my Star Wars trade paperbacks, I got her to sign too. She's the editor, so it worked great.
Oh, that's great.
Editor-in-chief is James Shooter. So he didn't go Jim Shooter this time. He went James, which is like the Sunday best name, so I don't know what that's about. I guess they're really proud of this issue.
Yeah.
It is called The Third Law. So I'm going to do a real brief recap, and then we'll go through it in kind of chunks. So for the headline is Princess Leia takes out a space loan. That's the story, folks. She takes out a space loan to buy some X-Wings from the Rebellion, and Darth Vader tries to stop said space loan from happening. for reals, this is a story of predatory lenders, folks. let's go through it here. So, all right. So pages 1 through 5, we'll kind of do it in chunks here. So what happens in this section is Princess Leia Organa, along with C-3PO and R2-D2, and the Rebellion Finance Minister, Viscount Tardy, arrives in the banking world of Argoa. I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. It even has phonetics there, but I still don't know how to read that phonetic. So anyway, I'm going to say Argoa. To acquire a loan to purchase a shipment of X-Wing fighters. But they're not the only ones arriving. Darth Vader is on the scene, accompanied by 3 hired assassins trained in unarmed combat, because it is forbidden for non-citizens of Argoa to carry weapons. Then we witness someone trying to smuggle precious metals off the planet by fusing it to his own ribs, and his crime is punishable by death. So there we go. So did these first few pages grab you?
Okay, so I'm really going to try to not be mean here, but the whole premise of this is so antithetical to what Star Wars is at this point that, like, I really had to suspend so much disbelief to get into just this being a comic, because this Namus podcast is from Empire to Jedi. Mm-hmm. So this takes place after Empire Strikes Back, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At this point, the diplomacy in Star Wars is over. Princess Leia isn't gallivanting around the galaxy with a guy in a red sash who has some official position asking for money. They're hiding out in, like, sub-zero planets. Like, the whole plot of Empire Strikes Back is the Empire trying to find the rebels. So right. Now she's just, like, going to go meet up with whomever she needs to meet up. Like, she's a secret mission person. She's like in the Millennium Falcon trying not to get caught. Like, she's a known person in the galaxy. And she's just like, I'm going to go ask for a space loan. And by the way, what the hell is a space loan?
Wonder what that APR is. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, I know we had, like, you know, like in Star Wars, you know, there's reference to credits and, you know, that things do cost money in Star Wars. It's not like Star Trek in that way. But, like, I don't know, like, going to get a space loan, like, the rebels, wouldn't they just figure out what they need to do, scrap together whatever, they sell some parts? Like, I don't know. So I will say the premise really bothered me. Putting all that aside, I mean, Vader shows up on page 4. Like, we're in it right away. And I appreciate that in terms of, like, a plot.
I'm there with you. I got to backtrack a little bit and totally agree with you that this whole thing, the premise is entirely ludicrous. Then on top of that, they make it overly complex as we go along. And by the end, it's impossible to accept this thing. And you'll find out by the end, folks, what I'm talking about, the twist ending. And you're right. The rebels can't just show up on some planet very, very publicly.
They're literally rebels.
Exactly. They talk about that, right? Exactly. And the Empire allows this? So, like, why hasn't the... I mean, at the very least, the Empire could just take over the banking planet, right? They don't have a problem swooping in and taking over planets anytime they want. Now, I can also immediately no-prize it and say that the Empire doesn't take over the planet for fear of galactic economic collapse. Whatever. I don't need that.
They are the economy. They took over. They are a dictatorship in the galaxy. Like, Princess Leia's head should be on a platter if she comes across Darth Vader. Like,
agreed. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Vader is so worried about stopping the loan. Yeah, he should be like, I'm here to arrest Leia. Let's get this done.
Like, this is the guy that tortured her and blew up a planet in front of her. Well, I mean, Grand Moff Tarkin did that, but still, like, he's now worried about a loan.
Well, you mentioned, you know, that's a good point, because this is the first time Leia has come face to face with Vader since he locked her boyfriend into a frozen TV dinner. Right?
In Cloud City. Presumably Han is still a frozen TV dinner, right?
Right, exactly. No reaction, no mention of that, no like, oh, you took my beloved, nothing. It's like, oh, hello. You know, it's all a bunch of hoity-toity, you know, quips at each other.
Right.
I do think, all right, so as you said, putting all that aside, I do think it's adorable that, like, they have to swear this oath to the rules of the planet, and they're, like, on this huge screen, and then earlier, like, the language they have to use, which is so funny, where when they come on board, they have to verify their voice or whatever, right? And he's like, yes, I will follow the complex ceremonial nature of your banking procedures. All will be observed, the law will be obeyed, and the balance will endure. Like, I love this BS banking, you know, almost religion is so cute. It's so much fun.
I got it. You know, I actually got to hand it to them with the dialogue, because they kind of do replicate perfectly that original stiff dialogue of Star Wars, where it's like, you know, half of the movie Leia's speaking with a British accent.
Yes, and half of
the, you know, so they kind of nail that. So good job.
Lucas stilted language. Whatever Harrison Ford said, you can write this, you know, garbage, but we have to say it.
Right.
And then Vader's entourage, right? So like he can't bring his stormtroopers because they can't have guns. So he hires these three enforcers that look ridiculous. Like these do not look like they belong in, maybe the one guy with the bumps on his head, but the other two do not look like they belong in a Star Wars comic. I mean, one looks like a vampire and the other one looks like, I don't know, a giant green fish man or something. I don't know. And they just, oh man, they look so Infantino though. I mean, look, there's no way you're going to mistake that for anybody but an Infantino monster.
They looked like, to me, like New Gods characters. Like they're from like Jack Kirby's Fourth World. Like that's sort of the vibe I got, you know. I don't know. Yeah, the purple guy with the gray face, he's kind of got like a Hellboy thing going on with these like chopped off horns and the giant Hulk fish man. I mean, they're fun comic book characters. That's what I enjoyed about it. That it's like, yeah, you have no restraints, no budget in a comic. So like, yeah, Vader's bounty hunter. You know, you think about that scene with all the bounty hunters in Empire, and like that's like one of those cool Star Wars scenes where it's like, let's just do all the cool, you know, ILM makeup here and make all the weird creatures. And so here they're like, yeah, we'll put a giant Hulk fish man. Like, why not?
I just realized what these three reminded me of. Starting from left to right, Frankenberry, Count Chocula, and Booberry.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that makes me so happy.
Brilliant.
Now, you gave credit where credit's due, so I'll give some as well. From the plot perspective, they do set up very early on that these scanners, right, like when you leave the planet, they scan you thoroughly to make sure you're not trying to sneak anything off the planet. And like this one dude is fused gold to his ribs, and they only find that by x-raying him. But it does set up a plot later, or sets up a situation later where they have to work around. So, I mean, he is setting up the plot well in that regard. So there's a lot of structure to it.
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, Chekhov's TSA pre-check over here. It's like, they're clearly setting something up. As soon as I read that, I was like, okay, well, this is going to come back later. Like, we're in Star Wars and we're running through a metal detector right now. Like, it's like every person in the galaxy doesn't have a blaster on them.
I got to say, Chekhov's TSA was not on my bingo card for tonight. So there we go. You got me. I also will give credit to Carlos Garzon here, because again, we think he's doing finishes. We're not sure, but it's probably a pretty safe bet. And he's done a pretty good job of sort of reining in. Infantino was very stylized at this point in his career, very stylized. And he sort of reins some of that in, so you don't get overwhelmed with that. But at the same time, you can still tell it's Carmine. So, I mean, I think he did a really good job.
Well, you know, I actually wanted to ask you something about that, Shaq, because you're more familiar with this period in Marvel. But, you know, my understanding and from my own, you know, comic reading that everything in Marvel at this time, at least in the superhero comics, but even in like war comics and westerns, like kind of look the same, the Marvel house style, right? Like Buscema, Romita, all those guys. But here it's completely different. It doesn't look like necessarily a Marvel house style comic. So at this point, you know, had that sort of gone away? Or because I feel like that still lived into the 80s.
I think they were experimenting more and more because they brought in people like Sienkiewicz. They brought in people like Frank Miller, even that were really doing some different stuff. So, and Carmine was kind of a legend at that point. So I don't know that they could tell Carmine or he would listen even to draw the way they wanted to. Because I mean, Star Wars was, you know, maybe not by this point, but you know, in the 70s, it supposedly saved Marvel. So at that point, if Carmine was drawing it, it was probably like, okay, whatever you're doing is working. We're not going to stop you. So you make a good point. And it could be that also his style just drifted the longer he was on it. Because, I mean, it does by the time. And so here he goes back to DC. And, like, I remember reading a lot of those Flash comics he was doing in the 80s. And boy, were those stylized. Just super stylized.
Even the covers. I mean, you know, those close-ups of, you know, of Barry and,
So I it's a good question. And I don't know that I'm versed enough in Marvel to say. But I do know that there was a lot of variation at that point. You know, I got to point out one page I just noticed, which is a really cool effect he did. I didn't notice it till this moment. Oh geez, we don't have page numbers here, do we? But it's the the page after they've just zapped the smuggler who was trying to smuggle out the gold ribs. And uh-huh. so they zap him. And the panel below that, it's just Leia standing there with the Viscount and Vader, and the guy's smoldering. But then there's this inset panel of her, like a really tight shot of her face. Yeah. And she's like, justice is a double-edged sword, Vader. And it's just a really interesting way to lay out the panel, to have an inset of Leia's face in a panel she's already in. And it just looks really sharp, actually.
Yeah, I like that. There's some good framing there. I mean, you know, one way to look at it is like, why is Vader 4 inches or whatever taller or shorter than her? But no, it's clearly he's further away and in front, because then you get the smoldering heap. It's like, are those, is that Beru? And
I was just thinking that. Yes.
It's like, don't show this page to Luke. He'll be triggered.
Oh my gosh.
I would say too soon, but this is from 1977, so I think we're good.
I think you're fair. Although every time I rewatch it, Star Wars, and I see Beru and Owen smoldering, it like shocks me because it's so not typical of Star Wars.
Yeah, I was like nervous about showing that to my kids. Like it was fine because it went over their heads just as it did for me when I was 6. You know, you don't think about that stuff, but like it's really graphic seeing those bones like that.
I know, it's gross. All right, well, let's keep this going here. Let's let the good times roll. Sorry, here we go. So we're going to go on to pages 6 through 10. So while 3PO drives their air car on the highway, Leia in the Viscount Tardy's vehicle is ambushed by one of Vader's cronies. This one's a giant creature from the high gravity planet, or as I like to call him, Booberry. The behemoth lands on the hood of the car and tears open the roof. Leia's quick wits save the day, and she blasts the creature with a gravitational field disruptor, as you carry, which increases the beast's density 7 times, which causes his body to plummet through the ground, ending up below the surface of the planet. Now, in the confusion, Leia is accused of disintegrating the creature until she explains the gravity device. Now, Vader shakes his fist, basically saying, curses, foiled again! Later, Vader makes it very clear to his other two hired assassins that they are pawns to be sacrificed. All right, so do these pages strike you any better?
Yeah, Shag, I love this. Like, seeing in this era, seeing a city that looks, which we'll know later, looks kind of like Coruscant. Like, you know, like in the original trilogy, you never actually get to see what like a cool big city looks like where actual people live.
Right.
Instead of just a desert planet or a... or an ice planet, or it's like everything's an element planet in Star Wars. And so it was cool. Like it felt familiar to me, but I know it's like only retroactively familiar because of seeing later Star Wars stuff, but I liked it. It was like, oh, even back then they were thinking about that stuff. And, a hover car, you know, it sort of calls back to Luke's land speeder, which so it's there's a lot of familiar stuff. And then the page with the action is just like good comic book action stuff. Womp, rip. It's fun. Of course the what do you call him, Booberry? Like
Booberry.
he's wearing underwear for some reason, you know.
Right.
It's like, why he can't just be a Ken doll, I don't know, but and whatever that thing he's wearing sort of like a He-Man chest thing over his body, I don't know. And then you get Princess Leia pulling out a device and with some technobabble. Like it's like some good, like some Star Trek technobabble, which I like. You know, it's sort of like, well, actually this is a da, 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 da. Like, okay, Leia, it's a gravitational thing, whatever. Like it could have also just zapped him to nothing. Like that would have been fine too. So I liked all that.
So one of the things I like about that too is from the reader's perspective, it does look like she disintegrates him. So that they tell us the story in such a way that we think she's disintegrated him, and it isn't until later where Vader's like, police officer, arrest her. And then, you know, if you find out, oh, she just made it heavy, which is great. And then you even see like the cutaway of like the tunnel that his body dug through the earth, which I just think is so fun.
It's so cool.
It's great. And then you get, you know, Vader literally shaking his fist as if he's saying like, you know, I'll get you, He-Man. He-Man, you know.
Yeah, it's like literally the last shot of every He-Man episode. So like, I really liked it up until that. I liked what you said about the, you know, you, so you see the tunnel down. That's some really good like visual hierarchy stuff with the comic, like sort of stacking. I really like that. But then with the Vader thing, it takes me out of it because it takes me back to my original point of like, the premise is so stupid. Like, he, why isn't he lifting, reaching out his arm and pinching his two fingers together and choking her to death?
Right.
Like, it's Leia. It's the leader of the rebellion. You got her. So that part, it's like, I'm back to like the original premise, even though I really enjoyed the action stuff.
The action was great. Yeah. It was him dramatically landing on the roof and ripping open. I'm not going to repeat everything you said, but that was really exciting. I enjoyed that quite a bit. And I got to mention the last page of this section where, so Leia's walked off. She's given her little quip as she walks off, and it's just four horizontal panels. So it's almost, you know, sort of dramatic movie style because they're widescreen, where the henchmen are kind of mouthing off to Vader a little bit, saying like, oh, you acted too soon. And then the shape changer says, we deserve a modicum of respect. After all, we are professionals. And then Vader, he doesn't force choke the dude. He just chokes the dude. He reaches over and chokes the vampire guy and says, you are professional pawns, and pawns are sacrificed for the benefit of the important pieces. And I mean, it's actually scary and very intimidating. That would scare the crap out of me. I think that was a really powerful page.
That's Vader. That's Vader stuff. You know how like in, so I don't know how you feel about Rogue One. I enjoyed seeing it in the movie theater as a fun experience, but the whole movie to me, the whole time I'm thinking, oh, so that's how they got the Death Star plans. Okay, cool. Like, I don't care. However, like the whole time, like, oh, these people are all going to die. Fine. But why am I supposed to care about them? But then, but those last 90 seconds where Vader just goes absolutely bad crazy and just kills everyone and destroys everything is so awesome. And I love stuff like that. I love when Vader just goes absolutely ballistic. And so this felt like that. This felt like sort of the first time in this comic that it was like, oh, this is Star Wars. Like, even though his Infantino's art, even in that second panel, it's like, why aren't both eye holes the same size? But even so, you want to see Darth Vader choke a... That's what you want to see. And this vampire guy deserved it from Vader's perspective. And kind of also, anytime you're in the presence of Vader, just don't mouth off. Like, didn't this guy see Star Wars? You don't talk back to Vader.
That is true. I mean, he's genuinely scary in this moment. And so, yeah, this is the first time it feels like Vader. I totally agree. Count Chalky, like, you know, he deserved what he got.
Totally. So. He is they are a professional pawns. Exactly. Darth Vader hired you. Know your role, dudes.
Right. You are to be eliminated at his discretion.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's keep going here. The Rebellion and the Imperial groups attend a diplomatic gala filled with rare and beautiful butterflies. And it turns out that one of 3PO's previous employers was a collector of butterflies, so 3PO is an expert on the subject.
Of course.
Well, of course. While chatting with Leia, 3PO identifies one particular butterfly that has a deadly stinger that's headed for the Viscount. Leia crushes the butterfly, and it turns out the butterfly was actually Vader's shape-shifting henchman. All right, so I'll start us off on this one. I really like the art here. Like, I love the butterflies flying around. There's a couple of them where he did, like, really thick borders around it. Maybe that was the inker who did that. I don't know. But I just love that, and you get the funky Infantino architecture, which works here, and I just think it's a very pretty, you know, three pages. I like it.
I agree. You know, I laughed when I turned the page, and I was like, oh my God, butterflies. But it's lovely, and... You need, in a Star Wars anything, if C-3PO is there, you need him to say something so, like, dorky and stupid and unnecessary that makes you both love him and be like, shut up. Like, of course you had a previous master who was a collector of butterflies. And by the way, C-3PO, who was that? I'm pretty sure I know all of your masters, but I know they're not there yet.
It's probably in the droids cartoon. They probably covered that one episode, right. I'm sure.
Yes. When he was multicolored. Yeah. I don't remember Anakin collecting butterflies, but okay, fine. And there's really good perspective with these. You know, the bigger ones are closer to you and the smaller ones are further away, and there's multiple versions of them. There's a guy in a tie for some reason.
Okay. We got to talk about that, so yeah.
Okay, please.
The bank official, the two bank officials are literally just in 20th century suit and tie.
Like, it's like, I thought this was a galaxy a long time ago. or a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. They have ties, though, neckties.
Just proves that bankers never change.
Yeah.
And I do love when 3PO is sharing all the butterfly facts in true Marvel style, all of it is done with exclamation points. So he's screaming about the beautiful butterflies, which just cracks me up.
Yeah. I don't remember C-3PO talking like that unless he's, you know, running for his life.
Even then, there's still a reservedness to it.
Yes. Yeah. He still just says, oh, dear.
All right.
Or we're doomed.
So I actually have something serious to talk about here. Believe it or not. And you said you haven't necessarily been keeping up with more recent Star Wars. So did you happen to watch the Andor TV series?
Yes. I have a hot take about it.
Uh-oh. So for me, I think Andor is some of the best Star Wars, some of the best just period drama television they've done in years. I love it that much. And it's sort of fun, though, to contrast and compare the ridiculous things you and I are making fun of here, which is the banking issues and the fancy galas, with the Andor TV series, because mm-hmm. both of those were in the Andor TV series, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. in Andor, one of the subplots is Mon Mothma is trying to secure funding secretly for the rebellion, keyword being secretly, by the way. Anyway,
she's not getting a space loan.
Right. Instead, she's funneling it off of charity accounts, which is a little shady, but whatever. We're trying to fund a rebellion here. So there's a lot of funding, and they're discussing these secret dealings during fancy galas. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, this comic's ahead of its time. So you sounded like you were holding your tongue about Andor. What's your thought there?
So first, in response to what you were saying, yes, it's totally ahead of its time and kind of cool that that idea of, you know, sort of goes against what I was saying. Like, well, maybe there is still fake diplomacy in the galaxy and Leia Hest is in disguise right now as a diplomat, you know, maybe. I really liked Andor as, like you said, like just a really good drama TV show. Again, I have a problem with the first season in that, well, in the whole thing, and the premise that, like, okay, these people are going to die. Like, that's sad. That just immediately makes me sad. Mm-hmm. And watching something like Andor, I think in the first season, it was simultaneous with when Star Trek Lower Decks was on, which is famously an animated comedy show.
Yeah.
And I would, after watching an episode of Andor, I would have to immediately turn on Star Trek Lower Decks just to feel good about myself again. Like, I found myself watching Andor just feeling super depressed. Now, the second season, because it's so compelling, obviously an allegory, and they're trying to tell a story about what they want to tell a story about, and you just kind of give yourself in, I just kind of gave myself into it. I think I experienced it better, but I like that Star Wars has both that and this, that it has something that serious and something silly. I like when Star Wars is for everyone, and I don't like, you know, I know how divisive the Star Wars fan base is, and
what? Really?
And I don't subscribe to that, because I think, like Star Trek, like Superman, like I think all the things I love, like I think it should be for everything, and you can have both. I just find Andor to be too depressing and too serious for what I want to do when I'm watching Star Wars, is escape reality and go to a time a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away and just enjoy myself. And I find myself watching Andor is like, it's like watching, I don't know, like a Ken Burns documentary. Like, it's like you're like, it's like they're beating you over the head with how brutal it is. And so while I appreciate its art and its writing and its seriousness, it's sometimes too serious for me.
I can totally see that. I can. And that's actually one of the things I love about Star Wars now is, and Marvel's sort of this way too now, is it's gone beyond just being a space fantasy. It's now a genre unto itself where, maybe that's not the right way to say it, but it's a basis where you can apply any genre to it.
Right.
Because you've got, you know, Andor, which is a hard-hitting drama, right? Then you've got the Lego movies, which are comedy, right?
Right.
And then you've got the Mandalorian, like you mentioned. That's a Western, right. You know? And so, I mean, you can sort of tack on any genre on top of Star Wars, and it works. And you know, the Rebels is simply a role-playing game come to life, if you really pay attention. And so I just love that Star Wars has that versatility where you can laugh your butt off at one of the Lego specials and then cry at Andor. Right. So I like that. And not all of it has to be for everyone. Like
right.
Skeleton Crew, if you haven't watched Skeleton Crew, that is the Goonies in the Star Wars universe. It's amazing. All right. Well, anything more on this section or should we move on?
Let's move on.
All right. So now both the Rebellion and Imperial entourages are invited to witness some of the banking world's weapons testing. There's flying ships zooming around, shooting destructive missiles. It's a bit like Tony Stark's weapon display in the beginning of the first Iron Man movie, just with less selfies. During the display, Vader's final remaining crony, a telekinetic assassin, as I like to call Frankenberry, takes control of a missile and guides it to destroy the Rebellion's Viscount. However, the telekinetic ends up destroying himself. Womp womp. R2-D2 had been projecting perfect holographic images the whole time, making the telekinetic look like the Viscount, and on the flip side, making the Viscount look like the telekinetic. So the telekinetic blew himself up. Ooh, boy.
Dumbass. That's like some stormtrooper stuff there, you know?
I mean, this section is doofy. I mean, yeah. I appreciate that they're trying to say something different about a telekinetic. Rather than just moving stuff with his mind, he has to become the object. So that's why he's saying he misguides the missile, because he's looking through the object. He's using his eyes. So he directs it at himself, which is sort of silly.
It's original.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. The big thing in here, though, is, you know, Vader, not only, as you mentioned earlier, you know, helped destroy Alderaan, he cracks a joke about it here. Yeah. He's like, this display is ludicrous to one who has destroyed planets. Ah, but the princess is quite aware of that.
That was cold. Oh my God.
That is a sick burn. Oh my gosh.
That was a mic drop. That was like, comic should have ended right there. Like, you know, put the credits, executive producer, Larry David, you know, like. that was wild.
Yeah.
Like, because that's one of those things in Star Wars. It's like the Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru smoldering corpses. It's so heavy and sick and like just it's horrifying to watch as an adult. The way you watching Carrie Fisher's acting and like the look on her face and the delight that Moff Tarkin has in destroying her planet. He killed billions of people just like that. And that's like such a horrific thing. And here Vader makes a joke about it. Like,
yeah.
Are you serious?
It's messed up. It's seriously messed up. So, all right, this is part. Remember, I said earlier, like in the beginning, like the story is ludicrous, and it just keeps getting more ludicrous. And what it really, some of it is the way Leia ends up avoiding or stopping these assassination attempts of Viscount Tardy they're way too convenient, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like for example, when she defeats Booberry, she uses the gravitational field disruptor, right? That she just happens to have tucked away in her diplomatic case, right? Okay. I'll give you maybe, because, you know, that's what people carry around with them, or whatever. And then the second one, 3PO, just happens to spot the right butterfly at the right moment, and he's an expert on it, and Leia is somehow able to stomp on a butterfly that's 4 feet in the air.
Crunch.
Yeah, right. And then here, for whatever reason, R2-D2 is projecting these perfect lifelike holograms the whole time, just on the off chance the telekinetic would throw a missile at it. And R2 can't project lifelike holograms. They're like these blue fuzzy things.
Right.
So it gets really hard to accept that, and she just always has the right thing at the right time. Now,
all she had to do was you have the perfect shot. It's burned into everyone's brains. Have her bend over, put something into R2-D2, and tell him, "I'm putting in a technology. You project." Like, we're all used to the image of Leia bending over, putting something into R2 and telling him that. It's burned into our brains. So just do that here, and then it'll explain why he can do that, how he can do that, why he would do that. But
now, if we ignore the overly convenient things for a moment here, just set that aside. It's a comic book. We're here to have fun, right?
Yeah.
I will say, pretty cool. Leia is a badass. Like, I mean, she feels very always. James Bond here. Like, she's wiping out people. She's killing them. And then she's making quips about it like Bond does, you know, which is pretty sweet.
I mean, it sets up her going, dressing up as a bounty hunter and going into Jabba's palace. Like, you could picture this Leia doing that.
Yes, that is true. Yes. And sorry, they just don't make droids like they used to. I'd offer to lend you 3PO, but he's in the shop for a tune-up. Ba-dum-bum-tsh,
and know? Why doesn't Vader just literally crush R2-D2 in his hand for doing that? Nope, he just sulkily walks down the steps with his tail between his legs.
It's because he remembers R2 from when he was a little kid, when he was a little Annie. That's why.
Of course, yes.
All right, so let's wrap this up. Let's take her home for the big twist. Here we go. So finally, Vader summons Princess Leia and Viscount Tardy to a secret late night meeting at an abandoned spaceport. There, he delivers an ultimatum. Leia must leave Argoa without her loan. Well, obviously she refuses. And Vader strikes out with his lightsaber, cutting down Viscount Tardy. But the Viscount was only a droid duplicate. What? The real Tardy died months ago. And Leia had R2 record the entire staged murder, transmitting that footage to C-3PO at the police headquarters, blackmailing Vader so he wouldn't expose her ruse. And Leia needed the fake Tardy robot in the first place to secure the loan. And she used the crown jewels of Alderaan as collateral. But she also needed Vader to destroy the duplicate Count Tardy before the Argo's scanners could reveal the truth, if that made any sense to you. What Leia doesn't know is that Vader has been playing a game of his own. He never cared about stopping the loan for the X-Wings. He just wanted the crown jewels of Alderaan. So he bribed a customs officer, and he's already stolen the crown jewels, and he's just letting Leia spin her wheels and unfold this plot long enough so he can slip off the world before anyone realizes the treasure is gone. Dun-dun-dun! That's the ending, and it says, next time, The Last Jedi.
Oh?
Well, yeah, right? Not the one you're thinking of, but hey, we'll get to that next episode. So this section is a hot mess.
Oh my God.
So, like, I gotta say real quick, so, like, this twist ending thing here, right? Like, if it made any sense to you people at home, I don't know. It doesn't to me, but Leia tricks Vader into destroying the robot duplicate, right? Then she blackmails him not to say anything so she can cover up that crime. Then Vader already knows it's a robot duplicate, and so he was tricking Leia the whole time so he could steal the crown jewels. Basically, to me, it's like, I know that you know that I know that you know that I know that you know that I know that you know the truth. That's what it feels like by the end.
I want to say something nice first.
There you go.
I really liked the twist of the droid Viscount Tardy. I like that. Like, when I turned the page and he's lying there on the ground with his face slashed open, I was surprised. I was like, oh, cool. He's a droid. Like, I really thought that was neat. How they got there, sure, was goofy, but it doesn't matter. This whole issue is goofy. It reminded me of, I was like, oh, when else have we seen humanoid droids? And I was like, oh, Lobot, Lando's best friend. You know, like, I really liked that. It kind of reminded me of that. And I wondered, like, maybe that's where they got the idea from, you know, that there is precedent for humanoid looking droids. And the other thing I liked that Vader had the last laugh. I think that's fun. Like, that's a good cliffhanger. And I'm glad he knew it all along. He should be one step ahead. On the other hand, why does he need jewels? Like,
right.
Like, what? Why does he need jewels? Why does he need to lure them to a planet? Why would he care about blackmail of her going to the police? Like, to quote Biff Tannen from Back to the Future Part 2, kid, I own the police. He is the police. I'll call the Brute Squad. You are the Brute Squad.
Right.
You know, like, I mean... like, it's Vader. He shouldn't need to do any of this, but okay, fine. He wanted the jewels. And so I do like that he got the last laugh at the end, but everything about this was just so stupid. Like, her explaining the whole thing Ocean's 11 style, like, see, really what was happening was this. You know, it was just so bizarre. At least in the recreation of the cover where she's whapping him and he's deflecting it, at least there's some distance between them.
Yes, there's several feet between them, yes. Although I will say, Carmen draws a pretty sexy inner thigh holster for her gun.
Which, yeah, what's, like, she wearing? She's got like a garter on.
It's the holster on the inner thigh. Like, wow, okay.
Yeah. Is that where she also keeps her clunky remote control gravitational device in
Could
her
be.
very form-fitting white gown?
Lucas always had a plan with that wardrobe,
Yes.
didn't he?
Yes.
The whole twist ending, it's so overly convoluted with the, like, the he said she. You made a great point, though, about Vader getting the last laugh. I like that. You're right. I didn't think about that, but that's really good. But it's just so convoluted. It doesn't even make sense by the end of it, because once you really start pulling it apart, like, it's revealed at the end, the whole purpose of Vader is there is to get the crown jewels, right? Like you said, why? Who cares? But he had them. So why does he go through? Like, he already bribed a dude and got him. So why is he going through with all this other nonsense about the attempted assassination of the Viscount and all this guard? I mean,
It renders the whole issue irrelevant.
yes, right? And then Leia's plan makes no sense either. Like, she wants to trick Vader into destroying the android, right? Because she thinks that if the droid doesn't have to go through the scanners at the end, then she'll get away with it. But she also says it has to look natural. The death has to look natural. Dude, the dude cut him with a lightsaber. That ain't natural. And then she says she wants Vader to dispose of the body. So why does she care how it, like, any of this? It's so confusing. It makes my head hurt. It just doesn't make any sense.
It made no sense. And like, it's sort of like they're all building up so that they could make a joke about credit ratings. I mean, I know credit cards
Yes!
weren't a thing yet that to that extent, but like, it's like, it would only do evil to TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. He makes a quip about a credit rating. Really, Larry Hama? Like, that's what you're doing here? That's why we're here?
Well, I actually think that, like, when I read that joke, because you're right, it almost seems like the whole issue was just to get to that punchline. I'm like, did he maybe just try to buy a house and, like, went through a really hard time with a credit loan or something? Is that what this is all about? I don't know. Because it's all about banking and all that. Now, we should talk about Larry Hama for just a second. I meant to earlier. So at this point in time, Larry Hama is known more as a penciler than a writer. In fact, he penciled that amazing cover just a couple issues ago, the Death Probe cover we talked about.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And this is one of his earliest writing credits. Prior to this issue, he'd written some stuff for, like, the smaller companies like Archie and Atlas and Warren. But then he broke into the big two with a story in DC's Unknown Soldier. Then in Marvel, he wrote an issue of Conan. And then this comic. So this is really only his third published story for the big two. And then, to be fair, I didn't think of this. I stumbled across this on the internet. Sort of interesting. Larry Hama would later go on to create a famous character, which we all love, called Bucky O'Hare, who is a giant anthropomorphic green rabbit.
Bucky, Captain Bucky O'Hare, he goes where no ordinary rabbit will dare, lives rent-free in my head.
Man, that was awesome. I couldn't have asked for that. That was amazing. But if you think about a giant anthropomorphic green rabbit and Larry Hama writing Star Wars, sure sounds a lot like Jaxxon the Rabbit to me.
Yes.
So I am going to claim that Bucky is a descendant of Jaxxon. So spiritually, at the very least.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's no crazier than anything else we've seen in this issue.
So, all right, the Crown Jewels of Alderaan. How does Leia even have those? Didn't they blow up on
Like,
Alderaan?
wasn't Bail wearing them? Like, weren't they in a safe? Like, did she have them when she's on the Star Destroyer watching her planet blow up? The whole planet was nuked.
I have a no prize because I'm that kind of guy. There was a West End Games module called the Graveyard of Alderaan, which is phenomenal,
Oh.
and that where a chunk of Alderaan survived. No people, but just like a vault, it survives as the planet explodes. It just blew out into space, and maybe that's where they found the jewels. I
It's
don't
like
know.
the Kandor of
Yeah,
Alderaan.
yeah. All right, so I got to share two more things. I cannot claim any credit for these things, okay? I was doing research on this issue and stumbled across this stuff. So this goofball planet, right? Aruga or whatever we call it.
Arugula, yeah.
Yeah, like arugula. Oh, that's even better. That's perfect. So Larry Hama creates it for this issue. I just assumed it was one and done and over. But no,
Oh my
arugula
God.
has a life of its own. So there was a book in 2003 called Boba Fett, Maze of Deception. It was like a Clone Wars novel. They used the bank in that, the banking planet, and that book. And then Wizards of the Coast published an article all about Aruga for your banking needs. So they fleshed it out a whole bunch more.
Wow. It became
Then,
canon, kind of.
dude, it's been on TV now. So
Wow.
this is crazy. So in the Book of Boba Fett, which none of us watched,
I did.
or no, all right, then most of us didn't finish. I'm one of those that didn't bother finishing it. Anyway, Book of Boba Fett, there's this guy who pays off Boba Fett at one point, and he's got this giant bag of credit coins.
Yeah, I remember that.
And some nerd has spent the time to look really close close at every. I love you, nerds. I look at every one of these coins and look at the Arabesh font and translate it back out. And apparently, the 500 credit coin in that bag, once you translate the Arabesh font, it mentions the planet Araga or Arugula or whatever. This planet has been mentioned in a certain font on TV, which is insane.
That's cool. That's a deep cut. That's
good
cool.
on you, Larry Hama.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think he, with the Disney deal, he gets any credit or any, and he gets any of those coins in that bag for coming up with that.
That is very true. That is very true. So at the end of the day, you know, what did you think about this issue? Was it the worst Star Wars comic we ever read, or was it goofy in its own fun way? Do we feel different now that we've had some laughs? Where are we thinking?
Listen, I mean, Shag, this is all dependent on the premise of reading it so that I could talk to you on a podcast. So if that was the only purpose it served, then it was wonderful. I loved every second of it. If I was in a comic book store and, like I said, I picked this one up in a 25 cent bin and brought it home, I would be like, well, that was a waste of 25 cents. I mean, I would probably like look at the credits and be like, ooh, Larry Hama. Ooh, Carmine Infantino. Cool. Ooh, now that I know it's Wheezy, you know.
You're right.
I'm not mad about it. There's enough goofiness in it and enough like cool Star Wars stuff, mostly Vader related, that I enjoyed it. And again, knowing that I get to talk to you about Star Wars, anytime I get to talk to a fellow nerd about Star Wars, I'm happy. So yeah, it's so all good. All's well that ends well.
Well, that makes me very happy. It's not a good comic, okay? But I had a lot of fun reading it. I'm glad that I'm reading it on the Marvel app. I'm glad I got it out of a 50-cent bin. Because I just looked it up while we're talking. I'm seeing people online selling this comic for anywhere from $30,
no.
$18, $100.
What?
$145. So, if I bought this comic for $145, I think I would be very disappointed.
By the way, I just want to give a shout out to Danny Fingeroth,
okay,
who is the assistant editor. He's become a friend of mine through the Bob Dylan world, and I can't wait to tell him that we talked about this issue. So Danny, if you're out there and listening, shout out to you. You're the best. I can't believe you had to assistant edit this comic.
I hope he's not offended by everything we said. Hey, the editing's great. There's no misspelling.
Everything's wonderful.
Everything's great from an editor's perspective. Mm-hmm. Oh man. Now a couple of quick segments here I like to cover before we get to the big award. One of the segments I like to do is called Playing with the New Toys, which is where we talk about anything that appeared in Empire that's made its way into the comics. So here we've already mentioned it, Vader deflecting Leia's blaster bolt with his hand. So mm-hmm. that first premiered in Empire Strikes Back, and it's showing up here as well. Then R2 uses his fire extinguisher to create a cloud of smoke to throw off an enemy target there, or to stop the butterfly. So that also started off in Empire. So there you go. So they're playing with some of the new toys. Then I looked at the letters page. So this is something that I like to do, where I look forward to a future issue. So in this case, it was Star Wars number 53, where they cover letters about the very issue we just talked about to see if there's any like contemporary commentary from 1981 that's worth mentioning.
Mm.
Now, I read the letters here. Most of the letters are giving a heaping amount of praise for this issue, including the twist ending. Some of it's over the top.
Fanboys.
Like, quote, the most fantastic art that's ever graced such a well thought out plot.
Oh my God.
I think someone was desperate to get their letter printed.
Yeah.
And then two different people suggested that this issue was as good as anything George Lucas could write. And I'm like, what?
He wrote Star Wars.
Right. I mean, maybe you could compare it to the Ewok adventure. I don't know. But like, really? Two different people? I don't get that.
Maybe they were like really zoned in on what we said earlier about the stilted dialogue.
Maybe. You make a good point. That's a good call. And then one commenter actually criticized the look of the shape. So the only negative thing I saw, somebody criticized the look of the shapeshifter, saying that it looked like a cross between Mr. Spock and Dracula, and that is dead on. Good call. Good call.
Spockula.
Exactly. So I have two things for you, Henry. One's a question, then we're going to do the important Golden Pliff Award. The question is this a Star Wars story? Because some months, it will very clearly be a fantastic Star Wars romp. Other months, it's going to feel like maybe a different genre was adapted, or maybe it's not quite it. So what do you think? Was this a Star Wars story?
My original note was, I don't know what this is, but I know it ain't Star Wars. And by the way, I feel like that about some of what is actual Star Wars these days.
Oh, okay.
But after like going through it again with you, it's like the most Star Wars.
Oh my
it's
gosh.
So Star Wars. it just depends what sort of bucket you're dipping into in Star Wars. You know, if you're dipping into that super silly, stilted dialogue, technobabbly stuff, then yeah, it's definitely Star Wars. And even some like really vicious Vader stuff. Yeah, it's not Star Wars. See how I came back around to my original.
I was going to say, folks, you are witnessing Stockholm Syndrome in action right here, but you pulled it back around at the end.
Yeah, it's not. I'll be real. I'm just trying to be nice, I guess. I don't know.
This is absolutely not Star Wars. This is a 1980s Saturday morning cartoon. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got the whoops twist ending. Oh, you know, it's got Vader shaking his fist again, like I'll get you, He-Man. And, you know, all of that it feels like a Saturday morning cartoon. This is not maybe this would have worked for Droids. I don't know, but it
did you ever
work.
Watch Droids? I never did. I wasn't in my wheelhouse.
I did. I didn't love it when I was young, and then when I got older, I was like, yeah, I bought the DVD. I'm like so excited. I watched the first episode, and I've never watched anymore. I should. I mean, I own the DVD, and it's probably on streaming at this point. I should. And the theme song is one of my favorites. Do 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 do. In Trouble Again. I love it. But yeah. So anyway, let's get to the important thing.
Is this less Star Wars? Like you mentioned the holiday special. Like, is that Star Wars to you?
Oh, okay. Yeah, heck no. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, maybe the animated short, you know, but the rest of it, no. Luke with the bleach blonde hair, Carrie Fisher coked out of her mind. I mean, it is not Star Wars.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get to the important thing here, folks. We are going to nominate
the Golden Pliff Award.
This is where we nominate our favorite moment from the issue, whether it's a story beat, something in the art, some aspect that we loved, maybe it's the butterflies, whatever. Both myself and Henry are going to pick one moment to spotlight, and each of those moments are going to earn a Golden Pliff Award. And if you're unaware, this award is named for the single greatest Star Wars character of all time, Pliff the Hoojib, which you'll find out more about in future episodes. Henry, you are the guest, so why don't you go first?
Oh, it is hands down page 14. Vader just going nuts and choking out Count Chocula. I mean, that's the red eyes, the menacing look, the wave of the hand, and then just lifting. I love when Vader lifts someone up by their neck above his already very tall, 7 foot tall David Prowse body. So yeah, that's got to be the best part of the issue for me.
I have the exact same nomination. So there
we
go.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, it's the most Star Wars page. It's the most Vader page in the whole book. It's great. Count Chocula looks fantastic. I mean, it almost looks like a Gene Colan Count Chocula where it's I mean, it looks fantastic.
You could see him choking. And like, they basically took the opening scene of Star Wars where he's choking the rebel and pushes him against the wall. And the rebel somehow turns around and is able to put his hands up before he falls to the ground. But even though he's dead. But you almost I wanted to see the next panel with Count Chocula, but it's like they took that exact image of Vader, that iconic image of Vader, and slapped it right on the page. Awesome.
It's fantastic. It is fantastic. So congratulations to Vader choking it out. You have won the coveted Golden Pliff Award. Please display it in a place of pride. So Henry, I need to ask a favor. Would you mind hanging out here for a bit? You know, maybe you can, I don't know, take out a space loan for your podcast. To do so, though, I think you are going to need the crown jewels of an extinct planet as collateral and a robot duplicate of your certified financial planner. Can you swing that?
I think I can. I think I've got one in my case that holds both Kryptonite and Obi-Wan's lightsaber.
Perfect. So excellent.
I'll check that.
I think your father wanted you to have that when you're old enough.
Yeah.
Now, don't worry, Henry. We will bring you back into the show. But after this podcast promo break, I'm going to read your listener feedback in a segment called Star Words.
Hi, everyone. It's your old pal, Henry Bernstein. I'm coming to you from Memphis, Tennessee, home of two back-to-back spectacular Bob Dylan concerts. I have a very exciting and special announcement for you. Many folks over the years have asked me, so, Henry, when are you going to start your own Bob Dylan podcast? My response has usually been, do we really need another dude talking about Bob Dylan into a microphone? Well, that is still true.
However, I'm pleased to announce that in late spring, early summer 2024, I will be launching Songs of Experience, a Bob Dylan podcast. It's a long title, I know. So what has changed? Well, to tell you the truth, with the great Pod Dylan ending, and with the blessing of and in deep gratitude to my dear friend Rob Kelly, I would like to keep the conversation about Bob's songs going. I've made some amazing friends and shared some incredible thoughts and stories, and I think there's more to talk about. If you have a song that you are dying to talk about in a public forum, please reach out to me and we'll make it happen. Sending you lots of love and see you on down the road.
Batman Nightcast is back with new episodes every month.
This time, we're covering the Dark Knight stories we overlooked in previous iterations of this show.
Anyway, I'm Chris Franklin.
And I'm Ryan Daly.
Join us as we find our joy with Batman Comics chronicling the Caped Crusader's first adventures with the Boy Wonder.
Thrill as we review the fiendish plots of a who's who of villains, like Poison Ivy, Killer Croc, Gentleman Ghost, and Clayface 3.
If this is a bit, I don't understand it.
Hey kids, comics by legendary creators Don Newton, Neil Adams, Marshall Rogers, and Bill Sienkiewicz.
Plus, the single greatest Batman story ever told.
It all comes back to Batman Nightcast.
I don't know what's happening right now.
New episodes every month.
Batman Nightcast, part of the Fire & Water Podcast Network.
Wanna make something of it?
Did you fall on your head?
Star Words.
Star Words is the segment of the show where we cover your feedback from the previous episode and is named for the letter column in these classic Marvel Star Wars comics. Now, I forgot to mention during the recording that this issue, of course, features Leia, right? But that continues the trend since the Empire Strikes Back adaptation. We've had essentially the spotlight or character-focused issues. We had an issue on Luke, we had an issue on Lando and Chewie, we had an issue on the droids, and now we've got an issue on Leia. So between the six issues of the adaptation, plus these four spotlight issues, pretty smart on Marvel's part, they've successfully burned off 10 months of the 36 months they have to wait and tread water until Return of the Jedi. So, hey, pretty smart on the editors. Also, regarding the cover, so my guest Henry and I had some, you know, strong words to say for the cover, but I've been reading a lot of comments on social media and various websites from a lot of people that love this cover. And if you're one of those, I want to hear from you. Leave a comment on our website, please. Just because it wasn't my favorite cover doesn't mean anything. I mean, I'm thrilled when people love comics, regardless of my feelings. I just want people to enjoy the medium. So if this is one of your favorite covers, please stand up, be heard. I want to hear from you. And speaking of this cover, interestingly enough, I found the original cover listed on the Heritage Auctions website. And it's the original. You can see all the black and white line drawings. You can see all kinds of notes on it. And it does mention that back in 2004, this cover sold for $1,782. So that is, honestly, it's a little less than I would have thought it would have been for an original Star Wars cover. But then again, that's 20 years ago as well. So maybe it's worth more now. I don't know. But it was interesting to see the editor notes scribbled all around the cover. Such as Carlos Garzan's name is on the cover twice, written in the margins, but it's scratched out both times. I guess Carlos was going to ink the cover, but ultimately Bob Wycheck inks the covers. Maybe that's how why Carlos's name is there and then scratched out. Then written in the margins is a note specifically written to Carlos saying, "Fix Darth Vader's head." So I guess clearly the cover editor was not happy with Carmine's work on Vader's mask. And there's also a note about this being for issue 47, not 48, and in May, which is then scratched out and replaced with 48 in June. So again, maybe they were swapping around the publication dates. And then one of the folks who signed off on the cover was Al Milgrom, by the way, co-creator of Firestorm. Anyway, I'm not sure what capacity Al functioned when reviewing this cover, because, you know, the editors were Louise Jones and Danny Fingeroth, but it's quite possible they had different editors for different things, like artwork or covers or whatever. So anyway, I just thought it was fascinating to see. And you can see all of these notes. I posted that cover on social media. You just check for my Empire to Jedi account. I posted that on Monday before this episode. You'll see it there. Speaking of which, on social media, you can find a lot of the stuff we talk about during this episode. I posted in the week leading up to the episode's release, so just check for Empire to Jedi on social media. And if you're not following Empire to Jedi on social media, please consider doing it. As I always say, it's about building a community of online Star Wars fans around the show. Now, first off, I always take a chance to look at the iTunes or Apple Podcast reviews. And if you haven't left a review yet, please consider it. It really helps to raise the profile of the show and attract new listeners. And there are a lot of Star Wars podcasts out there. I am a very, 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 very small fish in a very, 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 very large pond. So I can take all the help I can get. So you can look on iTunes or Apple Podcasts for Marvel Star Wars from Empire to Jedi. Now, if you're outside of the United States and you leave me a review, please just let me know. Otherwise, I won't know because I have to filter to your specific country. And if you leave a review, as a thank you, I will read your entire iTunes or Apple Podcast review on the air. So, just like this one from Bucky749, the American Samurai, who has his own YouTube channel, Bucky writes, "Grab your cape and deck of cards as Shag and his guest hosts hop in Shag's version of the Millennium Falcon, the Quantum Eagle. It's the only ship in the Star Wars universe that starts blue and has a jukebox and an 8-track player just so Shag can blast California Girls in the disco version of the Superman theme. But anyways, if you want to have fun and adventure, though no Han Solo until the annuals, we got the rest of the crew in Shag and his ever-changing co-host will help fill in that Han-shaped hole in your heart. And since people like to make Shag say funny things, quote, come on, do the monkey with me, comb hair." Woo, thank you, Bucky, so much for having me read all of that. But seriously, I really do appreciate the review. It really goes a long way to help promote the show. So again, find us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts as Marvel Star Wars from Empire to Jedi. All right, time to get into your thoughts. I have collected all the comments from our website, which is firewaterpodcast.com, and any of the emails and put them in a Google Doc. Now, I'm not going to be able to read every word, so I'm going to make sure to acknowledge every single person that left a comment on the website, and we'll read a portion of their comments. And remember, if you want your thoughts read on a future episode, be sure to leave a comment on our website, which is firewaterpodcast.com/EmpireToJedi. Now, this time out, we're covering our last episode, which was on Star Wars number 47, with C-3PO and R2-D2 facing Droid World, along with my guest, Brett Young. All right, our first comment on the website comes from someone named Brett Young, host of the Fantastic Poor podcast. He says, "What a great episode with a brilliant guest. That guy really knew his stuff about bunnies and the such." Oh, my gosh. I don't think you should trust that commenter, folks. He's a Philadelphia Eagles fan, so... anyway, then we heard from Tim Price from the Outcasters, Under Siege, an Avengers podcast, the Huntress podcast, and more on the Right On Network. Tim writes, "Wonderful discussion, Shag and Brett. My impression on the issue was simply fun. It gave the comic relief characters a quick adventure, a novel environment, lots of novel droid designs, and a chance for them to be the heroes of the story. Now, yes, I consider R2 to be very heroic, but when paired with C-3PO, they fall into Abbott and Costello patterns, or should I say Beetle and Booster. That's not a bad thing at all. I love the stories with a light tone, and like those comic duos, getting out of peril along the way is part of the fun. But the big thing, the restraining bolt comment. I really feel that Goodwin and editorial dropped the ball here. The whole point in A New Hope was that the restraining bolt was placed on the droids by the Jawas. They didn't have one on the Rebel ship, and if Luke needed a bolt to keep them, he wouldn't have been removing it in the first place. I'm no expert on the entire lore, but it felt like the bolt was solely for non-users that needed to keep the droids in line. Droids are inherently loyal to their current master, either understanding their function or intrinsically in their programming. But boy, even that language isn't great. But master is the word 3PO uses all the time, so I don't know what other term to use." Tim, great points on the restraining bolt. I will address one thing you said that I disagree a little bit on. You mentioned that the restraining bolt would be just for non-owners, and that Luke wouldn't have removed the bolt if he needed to keep the droids there. That's the part I disagree with. I think the only reason Luke removed that restraining bolt was because he was hot and bothered for his sister, which is a little creepy in hindsight. But anyway, so he saw that, you know, hologram of Leia, and I guess living on a desert planet, he wasn't meeting many girls, so he was desperate to see the rest of that message. So I think that is exactly why he removed the restraining bolt. Otherwise, I think both 3PO and R2, they would have kept it on, because, you know, Tatooine kind of sucks, and maybe they got to make sure the droids, you know, keep working. But regardless, I love the feedback. Thanks so much, Tim. Then we're from Movie Matt Royce from the TV Movie Rewind podcast. He says, it's interesting how the R2 and 3PO are the first two Star Wars characters ever introduced. They set the plot in motion and were often a visual representation of Star Wars, including their placement in the Marvel Star Wars comics corner box. Yet they were often pushed into the background. This issue gave them a chance to shine. They got involved in action and intrigue and lived to tell about it. It was a rather harrowing adventure for two unarmed droids who weren't programmed for combat. No wonder R2 took up smoking. Fortunately, his buddy 3PO helped him quit smoking and warned a generation about the dangers of smoking. Oh my God. I hadn't thought of that PSA in years, Matt. Thank you so much. Then he says, I'm still laughing. As for the restraining bolt issue, I wonder if that was a requirement of galactic law, like a leash law. Droids are required to have a restraining bolt in public. It would be just like those rebel scum to ignore the laws and let their droids run around a blockade runner unrestrained. Droids are AI. We all know what happens when AI is unregulated. Citizens, restrain your droids. Be sure to have them spayed and neutered as well. Wait, maybe that's what restraining bolts are for. Well, thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate all that. And hey, you may be right. Maybe there's something to that with restraining bolts. Then we heard from Rob Kelly from the Firewater Podcast Network. He has shows such as Fade Out, and he's my partner on the Who's Who Review podcast, and he does a lot more. He says, I remember buying this issue off the stands. While the covers is superb, whoever colored it really did a great job, I was disappointed it focused so much on the droids, because they were always my least favorite Star Wars characters. Sure, they set the whole trilogy in motion, but I always thought of them as supporting characters. But I get it, with Lucasfilm having so many restrictions on what Marvel could do with Luke and Vader, and now Han's off the table, they had to find novel ways to keep the book going. Regarding the toys, I did have that Cantina set. I still remember my dad buying it for me at Sears. It was a Saturday, and my mom was working, so it was just the two of us at home. He had to work on something in the garage, so I sat off to the side and put the playset together myself. So many rubber bands! I totally remember that, man. Oh, that Cantina. You'd press the little thing, and the rubber bands would flip the doors open and all that. Oh, I love that Cantina playset. Then Rob goes on to say, I had a similar experience to Brett's Christmas disappointment. My great uncle was very handy and had his own wood shop at the back of his house. He knew I loved Star Wars. This would have been about 1979 to 1981-ish. So out of nowhere, he promised to make me a wood playset of Luke's house. His words. And Rob put house in quotes. I was so excited. I had my own custom Tatooine playset. Every few weeks, we'd visit him and he'd give me updates. My 9-year-old brain pictured all the rounded buildings with moisture evaporators, the whole deal. Then we go there one week and he brings it out and it's a wooden box. Painted a shade of red, not to be found in Star Wars in any way. It had some white detailing, making the whole thing look like a clown's toy chest. No one would mistake that for a Star Wars playset. I was crushingly disappointed. But even at the young age, I knew I couldn't show that, so I put on my best fake smile I could muster and thanked him. I never used it in conjunction with my Star Wars figures. Aww. Well, you know, your great uncle was trying, which is very sweet, but I totally understand the disappointment of a young lad. So you were a good great nephew for keeping your smile on, Rob. Okay, and then we heard from Ryan Daly from Batman Nightcast and Cheerscast, and you can find him on Instagram as Dead Bothan Spy, displaying his custom Star Wars action figures. Oh yeah, and I am legally obligated to mention that he was also the host of a podcast currently on an extended hiatus called Give Me Those Star Wars on the Fire and Water Podcast Network. There. I did it. And he'll never let me forget it. Okay, so Ryan says, I listened to this episode immediately after the guest Brett Young's beloved Philadelphia Eagles lost their home playoff game, so it was pleasant to hear the joy and excitement in his voice when I knew at that moment he was dying inside. Oh man. And then Ryan continues, and when Brett mentioned artist Greg Land during his in-stock trade segment, I instantly thought, ah, Greg Land, the original AI artist. Well, thank you, Ryan. Then we're from Bucky749, the American Samurai again. Bucky says, this was a great episode, and when you described the opening scene, the droids theme was playing in my head as well. Also, add Art Carney and B. Arthur characters to my list of favorite characters in the Star Wars universe. Oh, the holiday special. The amount of mileage we get out of that holiday special is crazy. Then we're from Paul Kean from the Fire & Water Podcast Network. He has the show DC Special Cast, and over on JSA Presents, he's part of the Sandman Slept Here podcast. Paul says, great episode. Although I'm not as big a fan of Star Wars as some of you guys, in 1977 to 1983, I was pretty all in. I had all the issues of the series and always enjoyed it. I did recall this one as it was so droid-centric. I love the period you're walking through here. The, quote, no Han Solo, end quote, stuff must have been a challenge for the creators. It always reminded me of DC doing the same thing between Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 3. Yeah, Paul, that is actually a great comparison. Yeah, that tightrope they had to walk between Star Trek 2 and 3 is crazy. And then the tightrope they had to walk between 3 and 4 as well. So that could never have been easy for the DC Comics guys. Then we heard from Mike Thomas, who writes, "Great episode as always. I'm really enjoying your discussions and how the comics provide new adventures for different characters every issue, within the confines of the filmmaker's restrictions on what can happen in the comics. I also enjoyed your and Brett's discussion of Star Wars toys. I still remember the first four action figures I received for Christmas, which must have been in 1977 because I saw the original film for the first time over that holiday break. I received Princess Leia, C-3PO, R2-D2, and Darth Vader. No Luke or Han yet, but I still had enough characters to create some adventures, like a droid-centric or Leia-centric story, and Darth Vader is the villain." Hey, Mike, you could have acted out this comic. Interesting. Just get yourself a Frankenberry, Count Chocula, and Booberry action figures. Anyway, Mike continues, "I eventually got all the other Star Wars figures, as well as all the MASH action figures, so I'm pretty sure at some point I used my action figures to create a shared MASH Star Wars extended universe. Yes, I had a lot of free time as a kid." Man, Mike, I got to imagine a little Rob Kelly would have been knocking at that door of your house wanting to come in and play if he'd known you had a MASH / Star Wars, you know, mashup going on in there. Then we heard from Jason R. Lady, author of the young adult humorous fantasy adventure novels Monster Problems, Super Problems, Time Problems, and The Pure Short Club. Jason writes, "I had the audio cassette and read-along book of this story long before I had the comic. In fact, I think this is one of the last of the 107 I acquired in the Great Back Issue Hunt. I like the occasional R2 and 3PO adventure. That's the nice thing about these ongoing mediums like comics or newspaper comic strips. There's enough room to highlight everyone. A few items. Number one, you talked about how unusual ZX-3's Magenta Keller was and how it undercut his menace. The read-along book had different illustrations than the comic, and in those he's a deep red color, which in my opinion is much better." Yeah, I'd imagine he does look better in red. Number two, just speculating, but Kligson's cyborg look may have been an effort to visually differentiate him from Valence the Hunter, who had a more traditional sci-fi cyborg appearance, even looking somewhat like the Terminator after some of his fake skin was blown off. Good point, Jason. That could very well be. All right, then we hear from John Stibe, who is an upcoming guest on my JSA in the 90s podcast. John says, "Every time I listen to this podcast, I ask myself, what was I doing wrong with regards to Marvel Star Wars comics? I loved Star Wars and read both Marvel and DC comics of all shapes and sizes at the time. So you would think I would have been the perfect audience for this book, but it just didn't click for me. I continue to come back to Jackson the Rabbit, who was mentioned again during this episode. I remember seeing Jackson in his first appearance, and I did not get the impression of him as a tough-talking, anthropomorphic attitude like Rocket Raccoon or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or even Bucky O'Hare. I read him more as Bugs Bunny. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Bugs Bunny too, but he was not cool like Star Wars. So I quickly dismissed Jackson as the big talking rabbit and moved on. As I keep saying, this podcast is making me want to dive back in and read these comics if I only had unlimited time. But to be honest, it's more fun having Shag and his guest read the issues to me. Thanks for a fun show I was not expecting to listen to, much less like." Oh, that's fantastic, John. I am really thrilled you're enjoying it. And that's wonderful to hear. Someone that has never read the comics is still enjoying the podcast. That's a win, as far as I'm concerned. So thanks, John. Then we heard from Corellian Pirate, who is actually an old buddy of mine. We've been friends for like over 30 years, and he's in my Star Wars role-playing game. So Corellian Pirate writes, "I got a chance to listen to the episode over the weekend, so now I'm all caught up. A few things about this discussion struck me. This won't be the only time we see an Imperial droid modeled with Stormtrooper silhouette. The Dark Troopers from the video game Dark Forces spring to mind, and of course the Dark Troopers were later adapted to mainline continuity when they were introduced in The Mandalorian. Besides the book and record, Droid World is one of the few things to make the jump from Marvel Comics to the old EU. While the new Disney continuity ignores the EU, in turn, the EU mostly ignored the Marvel Comics before that. Droid World and Kligson are a rare exception, as game stats for both the ship and Kligson appear in the West End Games Star Wars role-playing game in the book Cinnabar's Fantastic Technology Droids." Dude, Corellian Pirate, you just blew my mind. You may have, you know, it's possible in all the years we've been friends, you've told me this once before and I just simply forgot. But dude, I cannot believe that Kligson's in that book. That is so cool. I mean, that book's just sitting right on my shelf, right behind me. So that warms my heart, because the Star Wars role-playing game and the Marvel Star Wars comics both mean so much to me. So thank you, Corellian Pirate. I appreciate you sharing the information. Then we heard from the Star Wars Splash Page podcast. They were very kind to help promote us, and they said, given the events of Marvel's Dark Droids crossover in the contemporary Star Wars comics, this episode from Empire to Jedi really resonated. If you're not yet subscribed to the podcast, do so. They're solid and informative listens, not to mention entertaining. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate that. Folks, again, if you're not listening to the Star Wars Splash Page podcast, I strongly encourage it. They're covering a zillion different Marvel comics. They've got a gazillion episodes out there, too, and a really fun listen, and they really do a deep dive on it, and they do a great job. All right, so this is the part of the show where I thank everybody who shared our show on their social media timeline. We're talking Facebook, Blue Sky, X or Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. I realize it is just a long list of names. It sounds like a weird phone book, probably. However, these folks help support the show, and they promote the show. And so it's important to me that we recognize each one of these individuals. This is the only time that Coffee and Comics is going to get mentioned, but they're part of our community, and they help promote the show. This time out, we got nearly 50 names of people who helped promote the show recently, and you could be on this list next episode. It's really easy, just by sharing or retweeting or reskeeting or whatever it's called on Facebook, Blue Sky, X or Twitter, Instagram, or Threads. So our thanks go out to Alan Boyce Jr., Andre Freitas, Andy Capellish, Back Issue Magazine Facebook Group, Between the Pages Blog, Billy D., Billy Hines, Black Falcon 69, Brett Young, Chris Franklin, Chris Mort, Ciro PL, Clinton Robinson, Coffee and Comics, Comic Foil, Corellian Pirate, Craig Fletcher, Kristen Vlad, D. Kennedy at Detective 38, David A. Scudieres, Fan Films Friday Podcast, Jeff Poyer, John Stibe, Keechy Baker, Lizanne Oswald, Magazines and Monsters, Mark Baker Wright, Matt Sorois, Mike Jameson, Mike Thomas, Normal Gamer, Outcasters Under Siege, an Avengers podcast, Paul Kean, Podcastcadia, Pop Culture Basement, a podcast, Relatively Geeky Podcast Network, Rob Kelly, Ryan Daly, Scott X, Stacy HD, The Star Wars Splash Page Podcast, Tim Price, Tom Shansky, Venkman, Wolfman But Older, and Zek Cap Boots. My thanks to all of you for your support of the Empire to Jedi podcast. I truly, honestly, I believe that the listener feedback part of the show is so critical, and this community of Star Wars fans we're building together is absolutely fantastic. Now, if I've forgotten or missed anyone, I am terribly sorry. Quite frankly, Instagram is a bit of a pain to tell who reposts, so it's possible I missed somebody there. If so, I'm very sorry. And honestly, it's probably the fault of Brett Young anyway, so just blame him. I do my best to find all the social media comments, but sometimes they do slip through my internet fingers. So please keep those cards and letters coming. You can, most importantly, visit our website, which is firewaterpodcast.com/Empire to Jedi. Leave your comments on the show post there. That's where I'm pulling all the comments that I just read. It's pretty much just from our website. And you can also interact with the other Star Wars fans and share your comments and joke together and have a good time. And speaking of interacting with listeners, you can also find us on social media. Again, that's Empire to Jedi on Facebook, Blue Sky, X or Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. You can email us at empiretojedi@gmail.com. My thanks again to you listeners for such a great collection of feedback. Now, we're going to take a quick podcast promo break. When we come back, we'll see how this episode's guest, Henry Bernstein, did on the banking world.
Hi, I'm Mike Garvey. You might remember me from podcasts such as Waiting for Doom, DZOTD, or The Gary Show. And I've made a terrible decision. I've started a podcast where I read Detective Comics one issue at a time across 80 plus years on purpose. It's called The Detective Phase. If you like comics, historical deep dives, or listening to a grown adult lovingly explain why stories from as far back as 1939 still matter, this show is absolutely for you. And if you've ever loved Batman and thought, what if someone took this way too seriously? The Detective Phase has you covered. New episodes twice a month, wherever you get your podcasts, on the Waiting for Doom feed, or at waitingfordoom.com. Therapy pending. I heard that Dr. Herkenstethner might be available.
It is critical you pay attention at this time.
Ready to blast off into Marvel's Novaverse? Join Xandar Radio, a Nova podcast, your ultimate destination for everything Nova. I'm Doug Smith, producer and co-host of Xandar Radio. We bring you news, deep dive reviews, fan spotlights, creator interviews, and epic roundtable discussions. Whether you're a diehard fan of Annihilation, The New Warriors, or love the various Nova runs, this is your show. So grab your Nova helmet Power up and tune in at novaprimepage.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Xandar Radio, because the Nova Corps needs you.
Okay, folks, we're back from break, and yes, we've got Henry with us. Henry, thank you so much for appearing on this episode. It's been an absolute joy to record with you again. You have taken what could have been a very challenging comic to cover and made it pure joy. I appreciate that, sir.
It was my pleasure. I'm just so honored you would have me back to talk about something so geeky that I love so much and, you know, with such a great fan as yourself. And I'll tell you, like, anytime you've got one of these just stinkers of an issue and you're like, God, I need a ringer to come on who won't mind. I'm your man. I got you.
I appreciate that. I will definitely keep that in mind. Now, why don't you tell the folks at home where they can find more of you, buddy?
Sure. You can find me. I have three different podcasts and you can find them all at henryjbernstein.com. I have a podcast called Funny They Don't Look Jewish, which is my co-host, Rabbi Brandon Bernstein, and I look for explicitly Jewish content in superhero comics. Mostly, we recently branched out from superhero comics and did war comics. And so look for that. And we have an upcoming episode about Batman. So that's all I'll say about that. I have a podcast called Songs of Experience, a Bob Dylan podcast, which sort of takes over the spirit of Pod Dylan from Rob Kelly, and where I go song by song, go through Bob's Dylan's canon and have a guest on who picks the song. And I have a now sort of permanent hiatus podcast called Superman and Lois and Pals, where my co-host Professor Sam Brody and I do a watch through of the now gone a year Superman and Lois TV show. And we came back to talk about the Superman movie this past summer. We'll probably come back this coming summer to talk about Supergirl. And I'll be back here and there to do various other Superman projects. So that's where you can find me. I'm on Blue Sky at Henry Bernstein. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh, I have a merch store too, if you like Bob Dylan and Funny They Don't Look Jewish merch. it's on my website. So
that's awesome. Well, there'll be links to your shows in our show notes, folks. So check that out as well. And thank you again, Henry. I really enjoyed this, buddy. You made my whole day.
Thank you so much, Shag. This is so much fun.
Well, that's going to do it, folks. Now come back in 2 months for the next episode when we cover Marvel Star Wars number 49. And I'll be joined by a fantastic guest to help me cover the issue. Who will it be? Come on, people. You know how this works. You'll just have to wait and find out next episode. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, I'm Shag.
And I'm Henry. And may the Force be with you.
Always.